The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you so much for being here this morning. You know, as we talk about AOC and Bernie Sanders' plan to have credit card companies and banks just charge 15% interest and that's it on credit cards and all consumer loans, by the way. That means that payday loans would disappear and all that. And you and I have, you know, talked about that and the fact that, you know, government shouldn't be involved in a private transaction between, you know, a seller and a buyer. And we mentioned that Tucker Carlson on Fox News agrees with them. Even though they're completely wrong on this, he agrees with them because he feels that interest rates are too high. And this takes me to the Uber and Lyft story from last week, which again, after the IPO for Uber, I think they dropped 6%. 6% of their stock value dropped on Friday over concerns of the business model. And this is something that you and I have discussed from the very, very beginning of Uber and Lyft. And I know myself using it, probably more frequently than you, I'm going to guess.
I haven't counted, but yeah, okay. I've used it probably 6 or 8 times.
Oh, okay. I've probably used it over the last couple of years 50 times. I've always been, when I see what they charge, I say, how do they do it? You and I from day one have questioned the business model as to, you know, what the sustainability is, especially because I've looked at it and said, okay, now if I did it, I'd do exactly the same way you would. This would be a business. You know, I was reading the Wall Street Journal and they had one person, well, this one guy tried it for a couple of weeks and realized he couldn't make enough money. He couldn't, you know, he was only making $5 an hour. But he hadn't seen what his maintenance was going to be. Gasoline, yes, but until you see what it's going to be over a period of years, and depending on the car that you drive and everything else, and you know, what you end up deducting off your taxes, you really don't know what you're going to make. And it's been tough for us to get a handle on it. Some economists have, apparently, according to WSJ, and they say after all the maintenance, you take all the maintenance, everything you've, all the, you know, your operating as a small business person, that it's anywhere, depending on the economist, between $9 and $16 an hour right. is what you're making. And that includes tips and everything. Some drivers may be making $16 an hour. I don't know. I don't know how many are actually going and looking at it as with a John Taffer business model from Bar
right.
Rescue.
Yeah, right.
I don't know how many are doing that. All I know is this, and you and I have talked about it. You think it may seem great. I've got like 5 friends that got, you know, are on Uber or Lyft or whatever, and they hardly ever do it. I figure one time I just made try. I was going somewhere, so I figured I might try to do it. They might have done it 5 times in the last year, and that's it. Well, that's really not what Uber's looking for, I'm going to guess.
Right.
And their turnover rate, from what I hear, is huge.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So you're going to have to figure out, number one, I don't think the government should come in and start setting what the rate should be. I want to make that clear. But we were just talking about, you know, different business models out there and unsecured credit, you know, on the credit cards versus secure credit and, you know, what you pay for a mortgage and just everything concerning banking. And so Uber and Lyft popped into my mind. You have right now where you've got tons of people that I'll put it this way. You have a very, very tight labor market out there. Couple of stories over the weekend. Small businesses can't find machinists. They can't find technical people. They're having the hardest time finding technical people that can come in and do something. Now, initially, it might seem, oh, I'm in my own car. This is real easy. Just drive people around, until you find out that in order to make money, there's a tremendous amount of work and record keeping that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And there is.
Mm-hmm.
And you just say, that's too much of a hassle just to see if I can make $10 an hour when I can go out $10 an hour and make that at a fast food restaurant.
Yeah, without all of the pressure of driving and especially in major metro areas.
Right, exactly.
You know, traffic or anything else.
So we have always questioned what the business model is, and I just believe that you're going to see, in order to have a successful business model, you're going to see rates raised.
Yeah, I think so. Because I think of the premium that people pay to get food delivered, including Uber Eats and DoorDash and some of the other ones, and you're really paying a premium there. But people are willing to do that to have that food delivered. Are they willing to pay the premium to get from A to B? And how do you do that in the marketplace when you've essentially established that yourself, where those rates are, they make sense to not just, you know, the consuming public, but I think on the generational front, it has made sense. Well, wait a minute. If I live in this region, if I live in this area of town, whether you're going to school as a young person or you're working in this area of town as a young person, I can manage to get around and I don't have to worry about a car payment and insurance. If I can use different services. I mean, of course, people in New York know how expensive it is, New York City, how expensive it is to own a vehicle there, and how it makes more sense to not own the vehicle. You can use a cab to get from A to B, or walk, or use the subway, or whatever it is, a combination of all the above. Well, in this case, my question would be, where's that threshold for the consuming public? Because I do think they're going to have to raise their rates. And I think the business model is going to have to change, because I think part of the concern by drivers is they don't know what the destination is. When they get there, they learn what the destination is. They know which category of Uber it falls in, but the driver arrives without knowing the destination, because then they deliberately made it that way so that you wouldn't have so many drivers turning down the short runs. And I actually talked to a friend of mine who was doing it for a while, and he said, well, I got into this one university area one night, and it was just going, you know, from this place to this place, from the dorms to a pizza place, and then from a pub back to the dorms. And it was these two-block rides, you know, that just turned out to be ridiculous. And he was complaining about that, and he said, it just wasn't for me. So I think you take all of the complaints by the drivers themselves. There's some stuff that's not going to apply, I believe. Being treated like an employee. You're a contractor. Let's get that out of the way.
Right.
You're now, if they want to change that and say, we're going to have Uber employees driving you, then they can change that at some point. Then that's a different scenario. That's a different setting. Then you can have that debate. But being treated like an employee, they're treating me unfairly. You're a contractor. Either it makes sense for you, the business model, or it doesn't. That's simple. You don't have to. This is why they've got that churn rate, that high churn rate, where you have drivers that are leaving and new drivers coming into it. One of the appeals is that they're getting paid instantly. Their account is being funded instantly, and that's appealing to a lot of people. But you have it in the service industry. You've had that for a long time in whatever it might be, but restaurants and bars where people get tips and they bring home cash every night, that's something that appeals to a lot of people without having that they can take advantage of without having to do any driving in a major metro area. I think it's going to change. I do believe the business model is going to change. Because the demand is there. The question is, how much are we willing to pay for?
Now, I did, when I was in New York the last time, I had five different Uber rides. And four of them were relatively new and said, oh, yeah, it's okay, it's okay. Mm-hmm. The last guy I had was a taxi driver for 15 years and then been doing Uber since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he's doing a lot better. Now, he's working, but he used to work it anyway. He's working 12-hour days.
Mm-hmm.
So he's working 12-hour days, 6 days a week. Because,
mm-hmm.
well, that's what I've always done.
Right.
And he says he said, I'm happy with what I'm doing. I'm doing better than when I was a taxi driver.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, are you busy most of the time? He says, yes, I'm busy most of the time.
Right.
And he said, there isn't much downtime at all, but I'm willing to go, anywhere to do it. But because I'm willing to do it for such a great length of time, I end up getting some, good fares and a lot of airport fares,
mm-hmm.
which he says help out because I get more businessmen and the businessmen and women, he'd tip better.
Well, and I think that's probably the overall concept. And that is, if you're more willing to say yes and accept different types of fares along the way, then it's going to even out. It's going to average out over a year's period that your average pay is this, whether you break it down per hour or per fare or whatever it is. But as when you're a contractor, especially a one-person contractor, that's always been the case. I talked to a contractor friend of mine recently, and he does landscaping. I mean, redesign your entire front yard, trees, shrubs, and everything. And he said, there are times when I can negotiate. I know I can negotiate, depending on the house, the neighborhood, for a higher rate. And there are other times when I know if times are lean and I'm not getting that kind of work off season or whatever it might be, when I negotiate for a lower rate. And that's all I can get. And I have to determine whether or not that makes sense. This is no different. And if you approach it that way, I'm sure you can, if you're willing to accept more fares, more types of fares, then at the end of it, right. That means you're going to get every type of fare and you're going to average higher. But are people willing to do that? And do people generally see this? Do the drivers generally see this as a part-time thing, not a full-time thing?
When I look at this, I can't tell you how much I would do it for. But when I saw between $9 and $16, if it's my own vehicle,
mm-hmm.
and I'm driving my own vehicle, and at the end of it, I've got to do all the work and all the calculating and all the tax work and save all the receipts and do everything else to make $9 to $16 an hour, I'm going to work at a fast food restaurant and make $13 or $14.
Right.
And then leave, right. and then leave and go home.
Mm-hmm.
And have nothing, no other worries, if that's what, or work any other job. And I just say fast food because when I was talking to these drivers, this was in New York. I mean, that's what they're roughly paying for fast food jobs is $14, $15 an hour. So I'm using that perspective, not the perspective from Texas where the minimum wage might be only 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
But I looked at it and I said, between 9 and 16 for my car, and it's a contractor and all the hassles that go, no, I'd rather just work $15 an hour at a fast food restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my choice.
Yeah, or...
And I leave it all.
Waiting tables, bartending.
Yes,
if you're into the getting paid the same day thing, that the service industry has been there for a while.
Right. Or being a laborer or whatever I've done before in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Cleaning toilets.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they didn't pay you, that's a job you mm-hmm. should have got paid immediately.
For, yeah. I think what they're competing with right now is that one of the things is that it appeals to people because it's not the same. They see it as not being as labor intensive, even being a bartender. I mean, you're moving around.
Yes, you are. Yes.
It's not one of these jobs where you just stand there. So they may see that as, well, I don't want to be on my feet or can't physically. I can't be on my feet all day.
Maybe the difference in generations.
Mm-hmm.
The actual job description didn't matter to me. It was simply, what do I take home at the end of the day and what's the time involved in it, the complete time involved in it. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about what I'd be doing. That's maybe the mentality of our generation.
Sure.
What does it pay me at the end of the day?
Mm-hmm. And also, what does it require of me? I can drive. I do it every day anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to know. I don't have to learn something new.
Right.
Driving is something that I can do. It's what I'm. Remember, this started out as, I mean, the concept still called a ride share program. Well, the fact of the matter is that it is a business model, and you are a contractor. There are other considerations. While it may not be as labor intensive as the service industry, where you're on your feet all day, there are still considerations.
Yeah, well, it may not be labor intensive for me, but I'm paying for labor intensive maintenance on my vehicle.
Yeah, that's the other consideration. And I think people thought it was going to be bigger. I thought they believed, or many getting into it believed that it was going to be that the rates would jump based on competition or based on the demand, I guess. And I don't know where, again, I don't know where that threshold is. I don't know how far they can raise those rates and still have a sustainable business model.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Road check is a critical aspect of the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance's strategy for keeping our highways safe. This year, the Inspection Blitz will take place June 4th through the 6th and will focus on steering and suspension systems. In addition to steering and suspension, check your vehicle's brake systems, cargo securement, coupling devices, fuel and exhaust systems, tires, wheels, rims, and hubs for compliance to help avoid being placed out of service. To help you hit the road with confidence, we're offering a free mid-trip inspection at participating TA truck service locations May 1st through June 6th. Our expert technicians will perform a non-measured inspection that includes your tire tread depth, air leaks, wheel seals, and more. Stop into a participating TA truck service to get your free mid-trip inspection today.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Santiago in New Jersey about Uber. Hi, Santiago. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Okay. You want me to start talking now?
Yep.
Yes. Go ahead. Start talking.
So the reason I'm calling is because I wanted to make the point that we keep on mentioning how a lot of the Uber and Lyft drivers, they want to be considered employees. At the same time, Uber and Lyft, they consider their drivers independent contractors.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to focus on that independent contracting part. You know, as an independent contractor, you should have the right to accept or refuse whatever ride you want. However, both Uber and Lyft, they keep a record. It's your acceptance rating, right? So if a certain ride comes across your platform or across the app and you decide not to accept that ride, you get penalized for that.
Mm.
And after a while, if you too many rides.
Well, but you can be an independent contractor and still have to abide by rules of the person that you're an independent contractor for.
Well, and in terms of the business model, that may not be working for independent,
right,
for the drivers in this case.
That doesn't make you an employee.
Yeah, that doesn't, because the other side of that, Santiago, would be, okay, everybody has to accept, you know, every ride, or they create new rules or scenarios there. Now, again, it helps you. It is an incentive, as I mentioned. I mean, I'm just looking at it from the outside because I don't drive for Uber, and I there are things that I don't know. But the business model, the reason that they put it in there would be an incentive for you to accept a wider ranging type of fares. And so that would get you, again, a higher rating, but also average out, likely, your earnings on a higher average. That's the idea, anyway.
Thank you.
young, fresh, hip, and cool. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on the new Red Eye Radio.
New? Really?
The new Red Eye Radio.
I don't feel new.
Who did that for years? I mean, it was like people change something. It'll be like the new.
Yeah.
The new. It's.
Yeah, you've been new for 22 years. You're not new anymore.
The new Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, no.
Have you noticed the difference? We're more upbeat.
No.
Yeah. More positive approach to the political world of today.
For the new Red Eye Radio, a more positive, uplifting view of the world.
Right. That's right. You people are doomed. I mean, positively doomed is what I meant.
The new Red Eye Radio, a more pessimistic look at our doomed society.
Well, if you want it more positive, I'll just say you're positively doomed. There, I did it.
I like that. That caught me off guard. The new Red Eye Radio.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a, all right, Deep Voice Guy, that's a good one. I like
yeah.
that one.
Yeah, I get it. Thanks a lot.
All right, so looks like it was the end of last week. Mueller will not be reporting. Well, he never said he would. Remember, it was supposed to be the 15th.
Well, you know what's funny is that you had both Nadler and Adam Schiff over the weekend saying, oh, no, he'll testify. He's going to testify. It won't be Wednesday, but he's going to testify. And then Nadler making the comment that because Nadler is saying they're negotiating with the Justice Department and Mueller. Keep in mind, Mueller is still an employee. Now, this is going to end any day now, but he's still an employee of the Justice Department. But then Nadler said, and if he doesn't, if we can't negotiate terms, we'll issue a subpoena. So he's going to testify one way or the other. You can't, once again, you can't change the rules through a subpoena. So let's say you got him to appear. There's a number of things that he's not going to be able to answer. And then it will be, because this is all about the show. Kimberly Strassel was right when she wrote last week, what does Nadler really want? He just wants to put on the show. But continue the show going. So then it will be on Mueller. Then they'll blame Mueller for not answering the questions. Because he won't be able to answer the questions.
You want to continue the political back and forth.
Yes.
You want new people to blame, but you can't do that. I mean, the president was railing again on the Russia collusion over the weekend, and I'm sure there are some people, including us, saying, "Don't bring it up.
Right.
Don't give the other side any." Every time you bring it up, then they attack you back. If the Democrats have nothing. Look, if the Democrats have, if you don't argue back with them, it's like watching the Democrat presidential candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's really going on.
Right.
Nobody's really talking about it. It doesn't mean anything because they're talking between themselves.
Right.
And they really, as we said before, they really won't go after Biden yet. So until they go after Biden, there's really going to be nothing there. But it really isn't that exciting. There's nothing there because there's no substance that they're talking about. And the things they're talking about are, look, what was one of the highlights of the past weekend? Think about this. The highlight of the Democratic presidential campaign this weekend was Cory Booker stating that those talking about thoughts and prayers after a shooting is BS, and he used the word.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is that positive really for your campaign? Does that go anywhere? No.
Right.
That change anybody's mind? No. Is it anything really of substance? Nah. You may try to get attention, but is it really good attention? No. But if the Democrats go back and forth with their heated rhetoric, but they're arguing between themselves, and the Trump administration has gone, it's over, it's done. Just don't respond and move on.
Yeah.
Then what do they argue about? If you answer them. They'll argue. If they got Barr, they would be pounding Barr because they could pound him, and they would keep repeating the media, his statements, and the arguing back and forth and the angst back and forth. The same thing with Mueller. That's what they plan on doing. And, of course, the president got hit for all the tweets that he put and, endless commentary on the different. Don't give them any ammunition anymore. Just stop it.
Yeah, move on.
It's done.
If it really is about moving on, as the Republicans, Republican leadership has said, and the president has said it's over, then it is over and be done.
Be done. Let them argue about it. Take because when they argue by themselves, you take it off the media table. There's really nowhere to go. It's over.
Right, right.
So, and that's how they should respond. Well, what do you think? It's over.
Mm-hmm.
Next.
It's done.
Well, this guy, he can say whatever he wants. But if you have to defend the president or somebody in the administration, the Republicans are stating something, well, at that point, you're sort of forced to answer. But if your side isn't saying anything.
Right.
Or if it's Lindsey Graham, that's okay. If it's Lindsey Graham or they're investigating something else. But really, when it comes to Mueller himself, and I guess some of it was because of Senator Burr, wanting to bring back
Don Jr. Mm-hmm.
on it, which repeat, but you just go, well, that's up to Burr and Jr. But I just wouldn't bring any of it up anymore because it's over. Mueller has said it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Mueller, what do you mean Mueller says he didn't say it's over? Yeah, that's when he finished his report. That means it's over.
Right, that's when he was done.
The investigation is over. That's what it means. He submitted his report. We know the conclusions of the report. So it's over.
And just like we said with that part of it, William Barr or whoever is investigating the FISA court situation from 2016, the summer of 2016, they're going to have to show the American people evidence. They can't just bring up their stuff based on the questions like Mueller was assigned to. But I suspect that won't be the case, that if Barr does approach something, because he's not a special prosecutor, he's the attorney general.
Who said it over the weekend that the Democrats are turning the Mueller investigation? Could you imagine another court case where the judge comes out and says, or the judge comes out and reads the verdict? Not guilty, not guilty.
Yeah.
And then the prosecution is screaming to the TV cameras, but you're not taking everything in context. You forgot there was context to the not guilt. No, they're not guilty.
Right.
Over. It's done. Move on.
Mm-hmm.
They may go back a couple of days and go back and forth, but then it's done. Mm-hmm. But even it's to the point of the attorneys, the prosecutors in a case where somebody is found not guilty and there's no evidence to show that they're guilty.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even identify what the crime is. And then the prosecution's still coming on saying, but we thought we could have had something, and the context was we think he was a bad man. People would laugh at him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you are now. So don't give them, don't be playing the game back and forth. Move on. But that's what they're going to do what they're going to do.
Well, because they have nothing else.
But in this case, can you move on? And I'm talking about another case. Because people should say we should move on from the Hillary Clinton email investigation. But emails released to Judicial Watch show for the first time that the Obama White House kept tabs on a Freedom of Information request for information on Hillary Clinton's emails that was improperly rejected by the State Department. Now, the State Department claimed in May of 2013, in response to a liberal group that filed a Freedom of Information request, that no responsive records, that no records existed. The agency's internal watchdog later determined that the denial to be inaccurate and incomplete, since Clinton used a personal email account to conduct State Department businesses. These documents suggest, says Judicial Watch's Tom Fenton, that the Obama White House knew about the Clinton email lies being told to the public at least as early as December 2012. So what they're saying is, This liberal group, liberal watchdog group, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, submitted to the State Department in December of 2012. They put in the request for information on former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's email accounts, and they wanted information from them, and the State Department wouldn't give it to them. The White House knew and was monitoring that Freedom of Information request. Why? Because they knew at that point that if they had given out that, this is what Fenton is saying, the reason the White House was monitoring it is they knew Hillary Clinton was using the wrong email.
Right.
She was breaking the law. And they didn't want, and so the whole point is, was there pressure not to release the information that existed, because we know it existed, but they didn't want anything coming out that would show her email account, because at that point, everybody would know she was breaking the law, and the White House knew she was breaking the law, because the White House was receiving emails from her illegal email account.
Well, and if that were the case, if she's breaking the law and someone else communicates with her knowing that she's acting outside the law, and they communicate in that same fashion, are they not culpable at some point?
So these documents suggest that the White House knew about the Clinton email lies being told to the public, said Tom Fitton in a statement. The Obama White House orchestrated the Clinton email cover-up. Several Freedom of Information requests were filed for information on Clinton's email accounts during her tenure at the State Department, which ended on February 1st, 2013. The most specific request came from CRU, which was another organization, which was submitted on December 6, 2012. We didn't find out about the Clinton email server and that she was using at her home until 2015. Had the State Department fulfilled the Freedom of Information request, the public might have learned much earlier than it did that Clinton used a personal email account hosted on a private email server while at the State Department. And, yeah, they're saying the White House was interested in right. that request. Why?
Because they knew.
Because they knew, that's his charge. They knew that at that point, that if it would have come out then, they would be tied back to knowing that Hillary Clinton had an illegal email.
Yeah.
And didn't do anything about it. Okay. Oh, it's going to be an interesting next year, is it not?
If you're sending and receiving mail email that you know has sensitive material that is sent to or sent from an unsecured server, are you not breaking the law? This is just one of many questions about the former administration. And going back to the whole William Barr looking into the FISA court situation from 2016, you have to include the documents from the FISA court from October of 2016 that were put out in April of 2017 by Circa News, Sarah A. Carter, and John Solomon, releasing those court documents that show the FISA court had rebuked the administration, the Obama administration, going back to 2011. Based on what? What were the concerns specifically
right.
based on?
Different from the email, of course,
right.
but
yes,
but still,
the point is, questions
as to, you know, going back and saying why was this all done?
Right.
Why was it allowed? Because as we said before, you may hate Trump and you may believe that Trump is guilty of collusion and obstruction of justice, even though today there hasn't even been a specific allegation of a question. There's been a general allegation of a question. But on Hillary, we can tell you exactly what she did and what part of the law she broke.
Yep.
And everybody knows it. Everybody has discussed it, including Comey. They all know. But no reasonable prosecutor would prosecute you for that crime because nobody's ever done that. No, we couldn't find a similar instance. Yeah, because no other Secretary of State ever did that.
Is this why the Democrats don't need Obama to campaign for them?
Good point.
A little bit of a separation, including that of the vice president.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. And finally, some predictions. The pollster Frank Luntz says Bernie Sanders most likely to win the Democratic nomination. But he did say, because I saw his original tweet, and he said, now copy this and save this so you can get on my case later on when it turns out not to be true. So that's what he says. Sanders is still most likely to win the Democratic nomination. I don't see that.
I don't see it. You would have made a better case for it in the summer or spring, I guess, maybe of 2016. I don't see it so much next year happening. And Luntz basing it on some of the articles in the New York Times and
right.
and this push for more and more socialism, but if your theory applies to Bernie here, you're assuming it doesn't apply to all the other candidates on the left, and it does to some degree. So that's about the people and what they'll demand of the party. They want someone who can beat Trump hands down with no question. Who will that be? Right now, Biden leads a lot of the polls. I don't think the nominee is going to be Bernie.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. It was a really interesting weekend. Really interesting. Hell froze over. Liberal women were out there shouting for abstinence.
What?
Yeah. It's just unbelievable. Alyssa Milano, because of the Georgia heartbeat law, saying that women need to show their autonomy and withhold sex from men until the Georgia law is passed.
Okay.
Which created a zoo, of course, on social media. The proclamation that liberal women need to practice abstinence as a birth control method. And it just turned into a zoo. And who else jumped? Somebody else. Oh, Bette Midler also.
Right.
Bette Midler joined it. Yes. So the other exciting thing was Trump at the rally last week calling Buttigieg Alfred E. Newman, saying Alfred E. Newman can't win it. And Buttigieg says, no idea who Alfred E. Newman is. No idea. He said, must be a generational thing. Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine. If you don't know who he is, he's Alfred E. Newman is the guy I got mind blank here. Oh, man. That Ted Koppel mirrored himself after.
Yeah, okay.
Ted Koppel always looked like Alfred E. Newman to me, at least.
Gary McNamara is a liar.
But so the best was Mad Magazine coming out. Did you see that? Mad Magazine tweeting out, who is Pete Buttigieg? Must be a generational thing.
Yeah, right.
That was the best.
Yeah, I love it.
So we're doomed. If a society doesn't know Alfred E. Newman, then what good is society? If you did not grow up. And Mad Magazine still exists today, right? As far as I know.
You know, I don't know. I'm guessing
but
they're
if,
still around,
if,
right?
If you didn't understand the sarcasm of a Mad Magazine, if you weren't raised with that, where Mad Magazine hit everybody, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Left or right, they didn't care. Maybe that's why we have the generation that we have. Maybe that is, you know, where we get the snowflake generation.
Yeah.
If you weren't reading Mad Magazine when you were 10 or 11 years old, this is what happens to our society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Molly Hemingway tweeted about this over the weekend. Buttigieg's hostility to religious liberty is deeply alarming, but so is his admitted ignorance of the comedic brilliance of Mad Magazine. Yeah. That's why we love you, Molly. That is, I think, putting it into context. It is the, what's funny is that, well, first of all, the president has a point. He kind of does look like Alfred E. Newman. But it drives the left crazy. Now, it used to be, I don't know, just a couple of months ago that the president would have been called out for calling him Alfred E. Newman. I guess in this case, they would have said it was a poor attempt at a homophobic slur, maybe, right? Just pulling it out of thin air. They always take something and turn it into something.
Oh, okay.
It's not.
Because I was wondering. I didn't know Alfred E. Newman was gay. I didn't know.
No, okay. But it doesn't have to be. It just, we can make it look racist or bigoted in any way.
Yes.
In this case, homophobic because of the mayor being openly gay. But now they're actually just responding to him, going, yeah, I don't know who that is. I don't know who Alfred E. Newman is. Biden did it a couple of weeks ago, his first day out on the campaign trail, not of the closet. To be clear, he has not come out of the closet as far as we know. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But when he was out of the campaign.
Well, no, unless you're a liberal analyzing the Buttigieg campaign,
right.
And then is he gay enough? Is he gay enough? Yes.
Right. It's a measurement thing. Which is kind of odd. In fact, it's very odd, but we don't write the playbook. We don't write the rule book. But what did Biden say? Someone said something about calling him sleepy Joe Biden. Well, you know, that's Trump for you. And so we're at the point where on the name calling, they've really just kind of either one of two things. They really don't care and never did care, or they're realizing that the American people don't care and that they shouldn't engage. Who was it over the weekend? And last week, someone wrote about quit engaging with the president. You're doing nothing but helping his. And that's happened a couple of times, in fact, in the media. Quit engaging with the president. You're encouraging him and you're building his base. The back and forth is what builds his base even further. If you go after him, don't respond to him. So I wonder if that's the new rule for the Democrats, at least for the 21 that are running want to run against him.
We talked about the fact of the couple of articles written, one on, you know, Kamala Harris is, you know, she's retooling. You know, she had to back off on the weekend. I don't know if you saw the clip, but when she backed off on the, you know, getting rid of all private health insurance. Mm-hmm. She laughed. I went, oh wow. She was a clone. For that moment, she was a clone of Hillary.
Right.
It was like a laugh. Ah! Like, oh well, that's not, you know, that's
right.
Not. Oh, come on. Everybody knows what I meant. Yeah, we did know what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also was on O'Rourke that everybody now is starting to retool.
Right.
Because they're having to reset that O'Rourke realizes nothing he has done has worked. Not catching anybody's attention. And what they're finding out with Biden taking the lead is they've all got to come up with a way to show they hate Trump more but are electable, that just throwing free stuff at Democrats isn't working this time out, because Democrats believe that if they're in power, they'll most likely get free stuff quicker than if the Republicans are in power anyway. Hey, you never know. That might not be the case anymore very soon. Last month, the federal government spent more money than ever in a month or ever in a year. For 7 months of the fiscal year, we have spent more money than ever before. And we're borrowing it like crazy, too, during good times, which is a difference. We used to borrow a lot during bad times. We've never borrowed this much during good times.
Right.
That's the problem that we talked about a couple of weeks ago when we talked about the budget out there. So, you know, don't discount Republicans. Republicans, you know, may be known in the future. Very few, very near future as tax and spenders.
Mm-hmm.
See the was it the conservative congressional caucus? All of a sudden, what do they call? I forgot the name of them. The Freedom Caucus. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, came out and said we've got to stop the spending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Over the weekend, Mark Meadows was talking about it. We have to stop this spending. And they talked about it. The spending during good times is doesn't spending like this only happens in bad times, mm-hmm. when they're trying to. And by the way, this is pre infrastructure. By the way, where'd the infrastructure thing ever go to? After Trump met with Nancy and Schumer, he hasn't said a word about it. Nothing. Will they even meet in 3 weeks? Mm. Are they going to come up with a funding solution? With government spending more than it's ever been before in the history of the United States, the first 7 months with government debt skyrocketing, are we ready for an infrastructure program of one, two, three, four trillion? How many trillion should it be? 10?
Well, I mean, why should we put a limit on it? If 22 trillion isn't bad, then what you're assuming is, or I guess what people might tell you is what, 50 trillion is bad? Why?
But
you don't see the danger now, you're likely never going to see the danger.
But the reintroduction, as they're calling it, that all the candidates now are viewing, the majority of candidates running on the Democrat side are looking to reintroduce themselves. And it's the fact that Biden has gone through the roof, his numbers have gone through the roof, and he has said nothing.
Right.
He has said nothing, is really nothing of substance. He has been criticized even by the liberal media, and nobody cares. He hasn't said anything. He's been criticized even by the left. The things that he has said in the past are coming back up, and the plurality of Democrats don't care. Why? Because, as we said before, it would either be one or the other or a combination of both. And we stated this in the very beginning. It would either be the fact of that I can beat Trump, and you would have to have some I hate Trump and some free stuff in there. But really the fact that you're electable and you hate Trump, even if you're not as vicious in your hate as others, is enough. And so you're a Democrat, you're Biden. We know you don't like him. You don't say it the same way we do, but you're the most electable. You're the guy. And that's where I think, and we talked Frank Luntz, who said he thinks that Bernie Sanders will win. Again, you never know. I just think that Biden right now, unless he makes, and he's got the potential to do so, make some huge gaffes, I still think he has the best road there. I don't know when he's going to have to say anything. You get into some of these early debates, and there's no time to talk. You filibuster, you move on. Well, with all my experience, we'll come up with a great plan, and that will cover everything that are the Democrats' priorities, that will be fair to all mankind and tax the rich more, but still fairly.
All right. Mm-hmm.
And blah, 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 blah,
well,
blah, blah,
again,
blah, blah,
because
blah, blah. I like that guy.
It really is. The approach by Biden is exactly what we said.
We thought he would do, what we advised him to do.
It's nothing definitive. You point toward more socialism, you don't go full on.
Right.
You like parts of the Green New Deal. You like the idea of saving the environment. Everybody knows that. And you start those, and this is exactly what you see and hear from Joe Biden.
Or,
well, everybody knows that this is wrong.
Or you have to, you say something now and you back off it in the general election, which he can do. For example, when he came out here in the last couple of days and stated that illegal immigrants should get health care.
Right.
And that's when you back off and you say, well, no, only illegal immigrants that are seriously ill deserve health care as anybody else who's seriously ill. But no, the illegal immigrants should not get health care, but you wait till the general election till next year to say that because nobody's going to remember what you say now.
Yeah, right. Because I think he's looking at it this way. The game is you get enough of the Democrat base and the people in the middle. You don't need, if you do that and you can be Mr. Milquetoast, then you can win enough of them back from Trump, the people in the middle. But that assumes that people in the middle are dissatisfied with the current administration,
you know,
the current president.
Pete Buttigieg says people don't want normal politics. They want people talking about the issues that will help them. Why do you think Trump's president?
Right.
And yeah, independents and a ton of Republicans want that, and maybe some Democrats do, but the plurality are behind Joe Biden, and the big plurality is behind Joe Biden. Why? Because on the substance of the issues, he hasn't said anything.
Right.
No, it's just they believe he's electable and can beat Trump. So Buttigieg is wrong when he keeps saying that. But it's like, no, that guy got elected already.
Mm-hmm.
That guy got elected because he identified what the problems, you know, were out there. What do you see as the problems, Mr. Buttigieg? What are you, what are you going to do? And whatever you have said hasn't gotten you enough support to even be a serious contender against Biden and even Sanders at this particular point. You jumped up a little bit, but in a lot of the polls, a couple of polls, you're still hanging around 10%. A lot of the others, you're down, near 4, 5, or 6%. So you clearly haven't caught on, and you've been adored by the media.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently they don't want, the whole question of whether you are gay enough, which came not from us, but from the left, that's out there for a little bit and refreshing and all those, all those other things, refreshing, intelligent, everything mm-hmm. else. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to, does anybody know who you are, care who you are? And do you hate Trump enough? And wait a minute, are you electable? No, that guy is. His name recognition is there, and sorry, you just don't have it. Come back next time.
It's hard to create a rock star in a world where everybody believes that they are a rock star.
That's right. We have got 21 now.
Yep.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Larger supplies, a buildup in stocks, lower prices. Those three things seem to be the common theme for most major crops this next crop year. In a supply-demand report delayed by technical problems, USDA finally came out Friday with its first forecast for this coming season's crops. Wheat, USDA projecting the crop just under 1.9 billion bushels, up less than 1% from last season. The first survey-based forecast for winter wheat showing a 7% boost in total output, 18% jump in hard red. Ending stocks for all wheat will grow, producers likely to see a half-dollar drop in prices for $4.70 a bushel. Basically, same situation for corn. USDA forecasting this upcoming crop, 15 billion bushels, second biggest crop ever, but that's based on normal planting progress, normal weather. Ending stocks could be the highest in 38 years. Prices, $3.30 a bushel, the lowest in 13 years. Soybeans, slightly different story. Crop could be 8% smaller than last season at 4.1 billion bushels. Exports may improve. Stocks could fall a little bit. Prices expected down 45 cents at 8.10 a bushel. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, will there be any serious trade talks this week? Will there be any discussions? White House stating that the president might meet with the president of China next month. But what about right now? Now, the good thing is China did not retaliate with any tariffs over the weekend. Will they today? Great uncertainty. The Dow futures down already 288 points. European markets down. Hong Kong actually up a little bit, 0.84%. The Japan stock market down almost 1% here at this point. So we shall see. We'll get into some audio from the weekend. The president with mixed messages again. As we have said, this is a president that has covered every angle on trade that you could possibly imagine, from ultimate protectionist to total free trader. And so we'll get to what was said over the weekend and more on the way.
Here's your forecast.
If you're traveling I-10 today from California to Florida, you're going to find some showers in the desert southwest, in portions of western Texas. There will be dry patches along the way, but look for showers to continue mainly along the Gulf states from the Florida panhandle over to at least the East Texas border. We will see some clearing for portions of Texas today. We'll be talking about the bulk of the rain again this week for the southern plains and Gulf Coast states from southeastern Texas over to southern Louisiana, central Alabama, and western Mississippi. Soils are already saturated and additional rainfall can't be good for the region. Today, the central and northern plains as well as the Midwest will be dry. Good news is farmers look for those fields to dry out. And for the most part, the Pacific Northwest is clear. Lingering showers will remain in the northeast. Clearing begins from New York City northward by tomorrow. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Disturbing on so many levels. Eric Carley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And come he's on. Eric, I'm Gary. You got something that's disturbing. You just read me a headline.
Oh, this is, I love this.
Just read me the headline.
All right, so this is from Newsweek's official Twitter page. Okay, here we go. Here we go. You ready for this? Americans have never been known to run from a battle until climate change. It's an opinion piece by Michael Mann, Michael E. Mann.
No, not him.
Mm-hmm.
Him?
Yeah, him, that guy, Michael E. Mann. Yeah.
The guy from Miami Vice?
I don't know.
The
Is
director?
That the same one?
I don't know.
It Michael E. Mann?
I don't know if it's the director or...
Maybe they'll give us a... No.
No?
No, he's Michael E. Mann, is distinguished professor of atmospheric science at Pennsylvania State University.
Okay. Thought it was Michael E. Mann. The
bunch of cowards running from a battle. Bunch of cowardly Americans.
We just can't face it. We're running. All right. Our audio cut of the day. The debate. The conversation going on over the weekend. Not much really debate though in the United States, and I think most of the world, that who's at fault for the breakdown of the China United States trade negotiations going on right now, and that
right.
would be China.
Mm-hmm.
China for backtracking on what they had already agreed to. Here's some of the back and forth going on. Yesterday, between the president's chief economist, Larry Kudlow, on Fox News with Chris Wallace.
It's not China that pays tariffs. It's the American importers, the American companies that pay what in effect is a tax increase and oftentimes passes it on to U.S. consumers.
Fair enough. In fact, both sides will pay. Both sides will pay in these things. And, of course, it depends.
If it's a tariff on goods coming into the country, the Chinese aren't paying.
No, but the Chinese will suffer GDP losses and so forth with respect to a diminishing export market and goods that they may need for their own.
I understand that. But the president says China doesn't. China, it pays the tariffs. They may suffer consequences, but it's U.S. businesses and U.S. consumers who pay, correct?
Yes, to some extent. I mean, yeah, I don't disagree with that. Again.
Wouldn't you hate to be Larry Kudlow?
Well, because it comes off the comments by the president last week that the Chinese are putting billions of dollars
into our treasury.
Into our treasury.
Right.
And no, that money doesn't go to the treasury without the American consumer paying that. Now, the Chinese suffer,
yes,
as Kudlow pointed out,
lower
but that wasn't
right.
the basis of the question.
Right. And that's part of the uncertainty right now in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
I think is the fact that they're not sure if you're part of the if you paid attention to the negotiations, You know, you and I going through whether it was Fox Business News, CNBC, Wall Street Journal with a great write-up, if you saw that, mm-hmm. on entirely, you know, how this thing broke down. And when you look at it, these are things that the Chinese had agreed to.
Right.
They agreed, or they were going in that direction. Now, it was pointed out that some of the White House are not very happy, including the president, with the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, who they believe has been too optimistic on what's been going on in the trade deal. And the reason is he's worried about the markets.
Mm-hmm.
He's Treasury Secretary. So, yeah, the first thing he's worried about is, you know, what's going on. I don't want to unnecessarily scare anybody. And let's throw out the positive news that we're moving in the right direction. For example, this came out over the weekend. Remember when Mnuchin came out and talked about the fact, and it was a key area. It was where you and I said, this is really, really, really good. And that's where Mnuchin came out and said they had agreed to an enforcement mechanism.
Right.
Apparently that wasn't true.
No.
China didn't agree. The United States said, here's where we want to go.
Right.
But that news was spread out there. And for example, you and I took that. Because nobody discounted that immediately and said that's false. They didn't agree to it. It was just the United States said we agree to it, but China did not. That's a huge that was huge, because that message in itself probably had the effect of helping the stock market over the last couple of weeks, you know, being positive ground. Because as you and I looked at it and said, well, that's it. That's the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even though the Chinese apparently did not agree to that, they were so optimistic that both sides were considering, when they met last Wednesday, to actually have discussions as to what they should do for the signing, you know, ceremony. And that ended, as we know, very, very quickly, because they never even got to the Wednesday meeting. What I think frustrates me, and we've talked about this before, is the president's communication skills here, where we know what's going on. The president is attempting to sell something to the people that really, really support him on the populist side. The tariffs are working. That it's tariffs that make it go. He's trying to promote tariffs in a positive way. Clearly, I believe the president understands what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
I think the president understands tariffs, because he's talked about it from both sides. He's talked about in the tweets over the weekend. There's even contradicting statements that he makes.
Mm-hmm.
We know where the deal is going. The deal is to open up markets in China to United States products, but not close them to Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
The president talked again about we lose $500 billion. Well, if you truly believe we're losing $500 billion in your own negotiations with them, you're not trying to get some of that $500 billion back. You're trying to expand trade in both businesses, which in all likelihood will keep the trade imbalance the same or more. And so he's trying to sell one thing. We know what he's trying to do. He's trying to come up the negotiations, just like Canada and Mexico, were basically free trade managed agreements. You had management in some areas, some things we don't like, but the majority we like, because just like the last time, because we put very little tariffs on our products, less than what is it, 2 or 3%?
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing's going to be if the new NAFTA passed. And this new trade deal with China will actually open up markets in China to U.S. products and have them available China to do what, you know, and sell their products in the United States, which is actually a good thing. So the president's negotiating team, and he knows what they're doing, are doing one thing, and he's off selling the fact that he's an absolute protectionist, which gives the impression to his populist base that that's what's going to be in the free trade deal, and it's completely wrong. It's not. Number one, what he's promoting is false. Mm-hmm. We don't lose $500 billion, because if we're losing $500 billion, what company would trade if they were losing? What person would trade with China if you were losing? If every time you bought something from China you felt you lost, why would you do it? You're not losing. You're getting a tangible good. They're getting a paper or an electronic dollar.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're getting, which they eventually have to use to buy a good or service in the United States. They might invest it for a long term, but what actually they're doing is they're taking the money because at this moment they're not buying a product or service.
I think the president's tactic may be, and it's still not a, I don't think it works on the surface. I don't think it works because if you're to believe the reports that the Chinese saw some kind of vulnerability, weakness in the president for complimenting the Chinese in recent weeks, if that's true, he personally may believe that, well, now I'll just show my strength. Hey, this is a good thing. I don't have a problem with these tariffs being in place. The problem with that is that a couple of things, as you mentioned, the trade representatives are negotiating a very different deal. But his thought may be that if the Chinese believe that I'm okay with these tariffs being here and I'm going to hold my ground, that may be why we didn't see an immediate retaliation from the Chinese over the weekend. We could see it. Retaliatory tariffs will likely go into place if the talks don't resume soon. And I mean in the coming days. So he may believe that that shows, these tweets over the weekend show some kind of renewed strength or position, and that he's turning his back to the Chinese here. We'll see if that actually is the case with the Chinese, because it gets back to the negotiations themselves.
My thing is, you wonder how his mind works, because again, these are things he said before mm-hmm. we were ever in negotiations with the Chinese, that we were losing $500 billion a year, and that China would pay the tariffs even before we ever entered this. So
but it was inevitable we were going to, because the president talked about that as a candidate in 2016.
No. Right. But he's saying the Chinese pays the tariffs, where he knows that's not true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He knows that he's not lying to the Chinese.
Right.
He's, as we said, when Obama said to his constituents, you can keep your doctor,
mm-hmm.
the president's saying that and not telling the truth to his most loyal voter.
I think the bigger effect there, I think the problem with that is that you're making a campaign promise, really. If you're selling it to the people, and this is what I got from the Florida rally last week, if you're selling those points to a base that's cheering that, you're selling it as if those tariffs will be in place for a long time, if not forever. And that's dangerous.
When the free trade agreement you're actually negotiating is the opposite of
exactly
what you're selling to,
because
your base.
If you're using it, to my point earlier, if you're using this just to show strength to the Chinese, it's going to show weakness to your base at home.
Yeah.
Because at some point, you'll reach an agreement with China.
Good point.
And what do you do with that when you go out and there's still a massive trade imbalance, when that's also something you promoted as a positive, or as that you wanted to achieve or fix again over the weekend? You're not going to be able to do that. These are campaign promises that don't need to be made. We're going to get a better trade deal. That's the only thing you need to do. The only promise he needed to make in 2016 is, we're going to secure the border, and I'm going to work to that effort every single day of the week that I am president, as long as I am president. That's all you needed to do. These over-the-top promises don't get you anywhere. Because if you ultimately can't deliver on them, then it shows a track record that doesn't get there.
Now,
the economy, I think so far, without any kind of negative impact on from the tariffs, is doing strong. This is something in the first quarter that we saw. We see unemployment at a 50-year low. Those are all positive things. Huge win. Put that in the win column. But if you're building your base on, we need to, and we got the call last week on Friday, the guy was convinced we need to shut the doors on free trade all the way around. That's not going to happen, and that's not the president's goal.
No, it isn't the president's goal. To where the caller called and thought the president, that's what he was trying to do, and that was his eventual goal. And we said, well, it isn't. He goes, well, then I disagree with them.
Right.
Well, that's not what they're doing in the free trade deal. They're not trying to shut off China. They're trying to open up the United States to China. and have China stop with their subsidies and then open up China fully to the United States as much as possible in the United States to China. And maybe little trade wins here or there. The same thing he promised in Mexico and Canada to his constituents is not what the actual free trade deal was about.
And you're going to need that political support on the other side of a win November 3rd of next year. It's not just about that win. It's about getting your agenda done in your second term. You'll need that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
There's a new Shell Rotella engine oil for gas engines. Shell Rotella Gas Truck is available now. Megan Pino, Shell Rotella Global Brand Manager, tells us what was behind the development and more about the product.
Obviously, Shell Rotella's heritage is heavy-duty engine oil, and that will remain our heritage. And we know that our customers work hard, but they also love to play hard. And many of our customers also own a gasoline-powered pickup truck, SUV, and perhaps as a personal vehicle or as part of the business. We also know that truck owners use their trucks for different purposes than a car, to be able to tow something, whether that's an RV or a boat for fun on the weekend, for, you know, your business, for hauling equipment. So you're doing something different with your truck than you are with a car. And so why use the same motor oil that you would in your car as your truck? There are three viscosity grades, 0W20, 5W20, and 5W30, which covers any gasoline-powered pickup truck or SUV in terms of the manufacturer recommendations.
For more, go to Rotella.com. This engine report is a service of Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So from what I know, there's no sessions planned, are there, to negotiate at all?
No.
And so the only thing is, I mean, where does the stock market go today with this uncertainty? The Dow already down in futures around 300 a couple of minutes ago.
So. Also breaking news this morning, Swedish officials have said they will reopen the investigation into the rape allegations against Julian Assange. That case was essentially shelved. Those allegations were shelved in 2015 while he was in the Ecuadorian embassy there in the UK. So we'll see where this goes as well.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.